Here on WEAA 88.9. I'm Sean Yoes, your host. Thank you for joining us for our first 2 hours on this Wednesday. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at First Edition 88.9. And don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook at First Edition on WEAA 88.9 FM. Go to WEAA.org on our homepage for the latest podcast of First Edition or subscribe to our iTunes podcast, First Edition. Also, hit me up on my personal Twitter account. The tag is at Sean Yoes. That is my name. S-E-A-N-Y-O-E-S, or go to my Facebook page. If you have information, insight, or breaking news you want to share with me, I'll share with the people unless you don't want me to, and I won't. Coming up in the second hour of the show on this Wellness Wednesday, Kenyatta Moon will be back. She is the co-host of the Holistic Living segment. She's going to continue our conversation about effective methods of disciplining children outside of beating them. I mean, obviously, that's a conversation that we're about to begin here in the first segment. Then Lamont Summers is back. He is the assistant professor of media law and ethics here at the School of Global Journalism and Communication. He will have the media report. That's all coming up in the second hour of the show. A little bit later in the first hour, the Mod Squad will be here. That's Stephen Janison, Ted Graham of the Real News Network, reporting on law enforcement and politics, including the revelation that two more police officers have been suspended in connection with the indictment of seven officers indicted for racketeering, facing federal charges of racketeering. That's in the Mod Squad segment. Before we get to that, we want to open the phone lines. The number is 410-319-8888. So on Monday, I had a conversation with Morgan State University professor Dr. Stacy Patton. She wrote penned an article that appeared in the New York Times over the weekend called Stop Beating Black Children. The article, the opinion piece in the New York Times is an essay that came out of her work that she's done on, there's a book that she has coming out. And I don't have the name of the book in front of me, but as a matter of fact, I can find it in a minute. The book that she has coming out, and I believe it's being released on March 21st, is called Spare the Kids, Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America. The essay, the opinion piece in the New York Times is incredibly provocative, and there are very personal segments of it where she talks about her own experience as a child growing up with an adoptive parent who beat her to the point where she had to go to into foster care. And she lays out her argument against beating children very explicitly, very specifically. And I'm sure she does that even with more detail, with greater detail, in her book that is coming up. The book, again, is called Spare the Kids, Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America. Specifically, Dr. Patton draws the correlation between beating children and slavery practices, Jim Crow practices. And the argument that she lays out is very compelling. It's historically based. And it's hard to get around it. So the question now for our listeners is one that is a controversial question because everybody has an opinion about this, regardless of race, regardless of economic situation. Should we beat children? Is it effective to beat children in order to discipline them? If you really believe that, tell us why. And if you don't, give us alternatives. What should people, because one caller, it was Aaron, as a matter of fact, he called and he said, well, what should we do? And it's a legitimate question. And that's a question that millions of parents ask themselves every single day when it comes down to having when the opportunity comes to having to discipline their children. What should we do if we're not going to discipline them by fanning their legs, as we used to call it? Or, I mean, some people use belts. They use switches. I mean, it seems, just listening to that, it doesn't seem real civilized, and I'm not saying that to disparage anybody. I had my own experience with beatings as a kid. We all did. So anyway, let's open the phone lines, 410-319-8888. We want to get your opinion. And I want to shout out one of our favorite listeners, Marion in Randallstown, who was the one who pulled my coat to this story in the first place. She directed me to the work of Dr. Patton. So shout out to Marion. You hit me up all the time, and I appreciate you so much, sis. You know I do. So 410-319-8888 is the number, 410-319-8888. Is it effective? Is it appropriate? Is it effective to discipline our children, specifically black children, by beating them? That's the question of the day. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Brother Leo Burroughs first in Bolton Hill. Brother Burroughs, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Yes. Good evening, Brother Sean Yost. Good evening, and everybody.
Brother. Yes, sir.
Well, I'm sure my statement will be controversial, but I must tell you that I'm of the opinion that it's an individual kind of approach that has to be utilized with young people, children, teenagers, and others. In other words, there's no one methodology that fits all sizes, as it were.
Right.
Some of our children occasionally need spanking. Spankings cannot be or should not be equated with brutality. I'm not in favor of beating up children, nor am I in favor of allowing children to do what some children do are allowed to do in our schools today, and that is to beat up their teachers and to beat up their parents in too many instances. So I'm sure this you're going to get a different mindset from others and those who will be accusatory to say, well, if you advocate corporal punishment in any time or place, that's being brutal. Well, white people don't know how to raise their children either. And we talk about black children, but I can tell you I have a school teacher who was hit in the head, friend of mine, 3 years ago, knocked unconscious in middle school, came back 3 weeks later, and that boy was back in her classroom and was not counseled or disciplined in any way. And so a lot of games are being played in the schools and in the homes with regard to children.
And Brother Burroughs, I understand everything you're saying, yeah. But ultimately, does all of that incredibly violent behavior that was exhibited by this young person who hit this teacher, which is obviously inexcusable, is all of that violence, how does that connect to us beating the children, using that as discipline? I don't understand.
Well, let me talk about it. I'm talking about the reality that you're raising children to be compassionate and loving,
right,
and prayerful.
Yeah.
I understand that.
Yes,
but by the same token, don't tell children that they have a license to do when and if they get ready, whatever they want to do to their parents and others.
Of course not.
And the state will protect them.
Mm.
I got a problem with that insofar as how it's being applied.
Okay.
We have the right to self-defense. Everybody has the right to self-defense.
Sure, sure.
And the children are not being told that at all.
Okay.
So I'm for loving and compassion. Work with children all my life in the school system,
right,
in the home, in the church.
Right.
And no one will tell you that I'm brutal with children.
Right.
By the same token, I'm firm, I'm a disciplinarian, and I demand respect on so must they.
Understood. Brother Burroughs, thank you, man. Appreciate it. Let's go to Oscar next in Northwest Baltimore. Oscar, you're on First Edition. What's your verdict? Hey, Oscar.
Absolutely, I'm opposed to beating children. So people say, what do you do? Well, that becomes an individual situation, because some children would respond to punishment, right, like taking away their cell phones, television, stuff like that. But beating children, no way, no how, at any time.
Right.
Now, Leo, he said on one time they had a four-hour show on another station,
okay,
supposedly a colored station.
Okay.
4 hours of people talking about how to beat children, what should be done. And Leo even suggested tying them to trees in the woods. That's what he said. It's on record. He said, he can't deny that he said it. But if you're going to beat children, and oh, by the way, there's no school in the country, the state of Maryland, the city of Baltimore, where they said it's okay to beat up teachers and your parents. Nobody has ever made a statement like that. Is the bald-faced lie. No one has said that. Because if a child hit a teacher, I guarantee you the teacher called the police, he's going to be arrested in the school, taken into custody. So that's just exaggeration.
Okay.
But no, we shouldn't beat children. Yeah. And people who never had children, and some of them want to show their dominance over someone, they choose children. So
I think that's a fair statement. I think that's I think that's a fair statement.
It is. There's no question about it. Some people, they just want to, they can't dominate people their own age. They surely ain't going to dominate white people. No. But so they're scared of children. We're going to teach you and beat you. I know, I'm opposed to that. And Sean, do me one favor.
What's that?
When the Mod Squad come on, ask him, can they investigate and find out what happened to the woman, the detective in the Freddie Gray case, the one that
the sergeant
undermined Marilyn Mosby's case. Okay. And she got locked up. I know that in Baltimore.
Well, call back and ask him. If you can call back, ask him. All right. Oscar.
Okay.
Thank you. Let me read a passage from this article before we go back to the phone lines, which are lit up. Thank you. The passage from this opinion piece written by Dr. Stacey Patton, she talks about this connection between slavery, Jim Crow, and how we have disciplined our children as black people. She says, quote, "Before white America enslaved millions of Africans, whoopings were not a parenting tool embraced by my ancestors. In fact, there is no evidence that ritualistic physical punishment of children existed in pre-colonial West African cultures, where children were viewed as sacred and purer than adults, and sometimes even as reincarnated ancestors or gods. It is a European idea that children are born in sin and should have the devil beaten out of them with a rod of correction. That brutality cascaded across other cultures through slavery, colonialism, and religious indoctrination. It should not be surprising then that black American slaves who endured the trauma of their own beatings inherited their oppressors' violence and for centuries passed down these parenting beliefs." This is one of the saddest untold stories in American history. That's Dr. Stacey Patton. She's a professor here at Morgan State University. She wrote the opinion piece that appeared in the New York Times over the weekend called Stop Beating Black Children. All right, with that backdrop, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to, who do we have? Let's go to Ron and Clinton. Ron, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Hey, I'm all right.
Okay.
I wanted to say, if you saw the movie Birth of a Nation, yes, they flogged slaves and flogged them in front of their families,
yeah,
whether it be man, child, woman, whoever.
Yes, sir.
And I know that we went past that and got into the 20th century, and some of that still came on up with us as we grew to be regular citizens of the United States.
Uh-huh.
On into the 60s, yes. 70s, yes. 80s, somewhat. But we're in a time now where children are running on their own.
Mm.
Parents are not at home. They do to feel what they want to do. I would never feel like I could trust a young person out here, in my own perspective, to help me or save me if something went wrong. But I would save him if he was endangered or something went wrong and he needed my assistance.
Mm-hmm.
But they would rather jump a person and beat them up themselves. That anger in our kids is just too much nowadays.
Okay.
There's anger on top of anger. And you know what? They're frustrated. And I can't see flogging them or beating them. But I can tell you one thing. Telling them that you're going to put them out of the house, take away a phone, put a PlayStation on the back door somewhere, that doesn't work either.
Okay.
You know, and I can't see if we aren't strong enough to talk to them, then they're going to run all over us as parents.
All right, fair enough.
And I believe you hit the door at that time when you say, hey, I can do what I want to do.
All right.
The door's open, take your choice out on the streets.
All right,
that's
Ron.
All I got to say.
All right, Ron, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Let's go. Is it Elaine or Elaine E. in Ellicott City? You're on First Edition.
This is Elaine.
Elaine, thank you for calling.
This is Elaine. I'm going to take a weight as a experienced parent who has beat her son, who is now 44, and I regret it. I now have two grandchildren, 15 and 17, and have never laid a hand on them. I talk to them. What parents don't know, when you're young, you get frustrated with your children,
right,
and you... It's easy to fly off the handle, but if you make a practice not to resort to physical beating, then I think that's the best way, because a lot of these children are being harmed both mentally and physically, and I've been guilty of that, and I would never do it again.
Elaine, thank you for having the courage to
And I'm going to actually buy a book for my son, for him to take, because my son now, who's grown up to be a really responsible father and husband and son, he and his friends sometimes tell jokes about how bad they were beat, and whenever I hear them
right
do that, it just makes me feel so sad. So I've apologized to him about that. I stopped beating him when he was 10 years old, but I shouldn't have never have done it before.
Elaine, thank you for your call. I appreciate you taking the time to call us. Let's go back to the phones, though. Let's go to Anonymous in Randallstown. Has some information that they want to share as an attorney. Anonymous, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Hello, Mr. Yost. How you doing, sir?
I'm all right, brother.
Hey, look, the bottom line here is that there's a legal issue, okay? It's called the Children in Need of Assistance, CINA, okay? What CINA says is that if you hit your kid, we're not talking about beating, if you hit your kid and your kid tells somebody and you go and that kid gets an attorney and they go to court, what happens is that your word against the children's word,
sure.
You know what happens? They side with the children in the CINA court because...
And part of the reason for that, Anonymous, is because, I mean, there was a time in this country where children literally got the hell beat out of them and no one could protect them. That's accurate, right?
You are 100% correct. Absolutely 100% with respect to what the children are saying.
Right.
But what we're talking about here is a much larger issue here, Mr. Yost, and I appreciate you taking some time on your show to talk about this issue
because
in terms of how you discipline, this is what we're talking about.
Yes, sir.
Discipline. The law in Maryland says you cannot use excessive physical discipline.
Right.
So if you talk about beating, that's excessive on his face. On its face.
Right.
So, you know, I don't want to be too vociferous here. I am anonymous. This is a case that's already, it's in court, it's being litigated.
Sure.
And I would just want to warn the parents out there, look, talk to your children. Do not hit your children.
You got to find a different way, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
All right.
Absolutely, Mr. Yost.
Brother, I thank you for your call so much.
Thank you for your time, sir.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let me take another phone call. Let's go to John in Ellicott City. John, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
How you doing, Sean?
All
I can do is talk out of my own experiences now. Many parents make the mistake of teaching. There's a difference between beating and spanking. My parents, you know, they were two loving parents, Christian parents. And my father, he only spanked me 3 times in my whole life as a youngster. And I remember each one of those spankings today. One was, you don't steal. 2, I was trying to ride on the back of an ice cream truck.
Okay.
And the third one, I taught back. And those lessons, they just stood me. I was never brutalized. I was never beaten.
Okay.
He had very strong hands. He was a hard worker. He spanked me on my butt. And with my own children, I only spanked my son once. But it first starts with a loving environment.
Okay.
And don't ever do it out of anger. But I don't, you know, don't go around and tell parents what they should rule out because my parents were not, my father, he never brutalized me, he never beat me to the point where I had to go to the hospital or where I bled. But
I understand.
He taught me some valuable life lessons.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, fair enough. John, thank you for your call. We appreciate it. 410-319-8888 is the number. 410-319-8888 is the number. Is it effective? Is it appropriate? Is it ever appropriate to beat your children to discipline? That's the question. I know a lot of people want to make the kind of define beating and versus spanking and make the kind of have a nuanced approach about it. But people who are in the camp of Stacey Patton say there's no difference. You know, that's debatable. Let's go back to the phone lines, though. Let's go to Charles in Baltimore. Charles, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Yes. Well, no oppressed people. It's insane for an oppressed people to be talking about beating their children into submission to beat them into submitting to an oppressive system.
You believe that correlation between how we discipline our children and the oppression that we receive through Jim Crow and slavery.
You can't separate the two.
It seems clear.
Right. Okay. And the 3 books. There are a whole bunch of books. I'm with just 3. People who talk about who even think about this should read Richard Wright's novel Blackboard. Number one, they should read Frantz Fanon, Wretched of the Earth. Mm. If they don't like that, read Frantz Fanon, black-skinned white man. And last but not least, read the late Francis Wilson's, Dr. Francis Cress Wilson, the ISIS papers.
Right. Indeed.
We shouldn't even have this discussion.
Well, and unfortunately, we have to have it, Charles, because there's still parents getting down like that. Charles, thank you for your call, man. I appreciate you. Let's go to Rachel in Owings Mills. Rachel, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Hi, Sean. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
Sean, I work in Division of Correction. I work for the jails.
Yes, ma'am.
Sean, I think that if some of these kids would have got disciplined, a little beaten, maybe they wouldn't be in the prison system at 18 and 19. I think that every parent should think about the way they raise their child and do what's best for you and your child. Don't let no books tell you how to raise your child. Don't let your neighbor. Do what's best for your household.
Well, what do you think, Rachel? I mean, what do you
think? I think, Sean, because I got beaten and I am a very good woman, I think, Sean, people should spank their kids if they need it. Okay. I really do.
All right. Fair enough. Rachel, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Let's go back to the phone lines. We're almost out of time. One quick more quick call. Let's go to Michael next. Michael, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Hey, Sean, it's Mike, man. I'm the guy that came over and photographed you about a month ago.
Oh, hey, brother.
But very quickly, three things. One, my pop only popped me three times in my lifetime, and that was wait till your dad get home. Mm-hmm. So that has a black family dynamic there.
It's interesting, Mike, that when people who only got hit a few times, they remember every time.
Abso-freaking-lutely, dude. Mom, she whipped my butt with a narration. Also, I had a friend, I work in New York, and he's a white guy, and we talked about spanking his child.
Yeah.
And he was very young, and he wanted to pop. I told him, just pop the diaper. It'll get your son's attention. And his psychology was, if I hit my child to get him to do what I want, he will grow up to hit somebody else to get them to do what I want.
Well,
hence, the slavery point.
Sure.
You know, because that's what it was about for us. Is they were beating us to get us to do what they wanted us to do.
Exactly. Mike, we're actually out of time, brother. But I appreciate you calling in and giving your insight. And I appreciate all of our callers for calling up and talking about this controversial issue. And unfortunately, as Charles identified, we shouldn't necessarily be having to talk about this, but we do have to talk about it because it's an issue that continues to this day. Some of the arguments are inescapable. So thank you all again. Always the most intelligent listeners on the air. We don't ever take that for granted, so I thank you for your insights. We're going to take a break, though. We're going to go to the Mod Squad when we come back. That's Stephen Janis and Taya Graham of the Real News Network. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. As we make the transition from the controversial topic of disciplining children to the controversial group, the Mod Squad.
Yeah.
They're always controversial. And even more controversial today because mm-hmm. it's only one half of the team.
I know. The
one
half
of the team. Well,
let's face it. You know. Yeah. What are you going to do?
Stephen Janis.
I'm not young and beautiful.
Yeah. Stephen Janis is in the studio.
Yes.
Taya thinks you're young and beautiful.
Yeah, maybe.
She's not here.
She's a little under the weather, but she'll be back on Friday.
All right. Very good.
Yeah.
Good to see you, though, bro.
Good to see you too. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, of course. Yeah. So let's start with the tough stuff first. Mm-hmm. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but two more officers
were suspended. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So as everyone knows, last week or 2 weeks ago, the U.S. Attorney's Office announced that they were indicting seven police officers who had been participating in their own sort of version, Baltimore version of Training Day,
right.
Who had been robbing suspects and dealing drugs and, you know, illegal searches,
right.
You name it. So two more officers were suspended related to this investigation. But, you know, this police are not giving any specifics because this is, and I think this particular, this happens every time there's an investigation. Some officers will get charged, some will get suspended. But part of the problem is that we, as the press and the media and as the public, are not entitled to know what exactly their connection or what they did because they hide behind these personnel laws. They say we can't know anything. So I think it's troubling, but it also shows that, you know, I think it sort of plays into the questions that were raised when you find out that seven officers were putting in fake overtime slips and, you know, weren't showing up to work and were robbing people and setting up robberies. How come we didn't know? How come, who else was involved? How could seven people operate with such impunity? Even during the investigation by the Department of Justice, they were doing this. So the questions that were raised during this investigation are now even deeper because you have two more officers suspended. And really, unless there's some sort of strange vacuum-packed police department, for seven guys, you're telling me that not a single police officer, not a single supervisor, the, you know, lieutenant who was signing their overtime slips, none of these people had any sort of knowledge of what these guys were doing, nothing on the streets. I mean, Baltimore is a town that talks.
This is somebody referred to Baltimore as, it was a show that was a small town. Did it call it? Not Mayberry. It wasn't Mayberry. It was someplace
else.
Yeah. But whatever it was appropriate. Oh, it was Dukes of Hazzard.
Dukes of Hazzard. Yeah. I mean, so, you have this lack of information. And we also heard from our sources, multiple sources told me that the police department was trying to locate all the take-home cars these officers had. Just to explain to the people who don't know what a take-home car is, Baltimore City police have a penchant for giving, widely distributing take-home cars. They're not patrol cars, but rather cars that the city rents,
right,
or leases. You know, new model cars that they give to people from anywhere from sergeants to lieutenants. Really, we're supposed to go to commanders who have to come to see them, but if a practice that has spread. And, you know, multiple sources told me that one of the gentlemen, the sergeant, had like five take-home cars and the other couple guys had two or three take-home cars and they spread them throughout the city. I asked TJ Smith for comment. He would not specifically address those allegations, but he did say that they had recovered all the cars. I asked him further, how many take-home cars did these officers have? And he would not answer that question. But it is very, very important as we think and we continue to have this discussion about what policing is about in the city, that this investigation illuminates, which is about money. Besides the fact that these officers were taking overtime that they weren't earning and stealing it, they also had access to free vehicles, which includes any type of rental car that they want and includes, well, not any kind they want, but, you know, nice rental cars, which includes gas and maintenance. So they basically were like, top level executives in a way. They had access to perks that most of us could only dream of. So while you're sitting there saying there are children that don't have books in the classroom,
right,
and, you know, they're mice in the class, mice feces, and,
right,
and
right,
don't
right.
have hate. Well, just to let you
can't
know, these
drink the water.
There are, you know, last time I did an investigation of this, there were hundreds of take home cars in the police department. Many, a couple dozen that were driven to Pennsylvania out of state, all at the taxpayers' expense. I have done investigations where rental cars that were being rented were being routinely destroyed to the cost of hundreds of thousands of dollars. These officers obviously had access to multiple cars, from my sources are telling me, and they were able to use these cars however they wanted.
There's a couple of things that I want to ask you, Stephen, before
sure.
we open up the phone lines. People want to get into the conversation, of course, as always. But I want to talk about Herschel first.
Herschel, yeah.
I have not seen the video that the young lady, when she called up, she
I watched
posted.
It, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This guy, from everything that I'm hearing, was just, he was bonkers.
Yeah,
he was
like
out of control.
He was well known. You know, I was on a thing with D. Watkins, and I believe D. Watkins told me that he knew him. I mean, he was well known around the city as being a difficult police officer. Well, let's say difficult. Problem.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like when we talk about Training Day and everybody knew the lead character. Everybody knew, a lot of people knew this guy. You know, he was well known for being rough, for being, you know, doing what he's accused of doing.
Right.
You know, basically completely abrogating people's rights and participating in rogue policing.
Right.
I mean, he was a well-known entity. This was from the people I've spoken to since then, they're like, oh, yeah, we know him. I mean, he was a known person around the city as a person who engaged in what we would call aggressive policing, illegal policing, right, or unconstitutional practices.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
Then I'll talk. We'll open up the phones.
But yeah.
In all your years, I mean, mm-hmm, you reported more really prolifically than just about anybody that I know on, mm-hmm, the kind of the dark side of the police department. I mean, I'm saying you have been a balanced reporter, but I mean,
no, I
understand. You've never shunned from talking about, yeah, the tough stuff. So my question to you, from your perspective,
mm-hmm,
what is this specific? I mean, we know about the towing scandals. We know about,
right,
we know about Kossum beating the guy up on the, yeah, corner of the liquor store right across the street. We know, mm-hmm, I mean, we know about Shamba and we know about all this stuff. But what does this specifically say about this department in your,
okay,
mind?
I mean, well, it says two things that I think people need to sort of bear in mind when you're thinking about this. Number one, there is no accountability in the Baltimore City Police Department. There is absolutely none. Anybody who thinks internal affairs or there is any sort of ability to control the actions of the officers within that department should just go somewhere else, because it's non-existent. These seven officers were able to operate with impunity and to rob and steal people. And despite the fact that there were complaints about them and internal affairs investigations, nothing happened. So you have absolutely no accountability. That's number one. That's your three things. Number two, plainclothes is problematic. What Commissioner Davis said about ending plainclothes, 90% of the stuff I've written about that are problematic in terms of just the brutality and the illegal operations come from plainclothes units.
Right.
Plainclothes units are the problem. And they always have been a problem. And they exacerbate a lot of other problems because people think we don't have enough police officers. Well, no, we don't have any officers in patrol because they're all in plain clothes. This particular unit had 47 officers, I believe. 47 people not in that specific unit, but 47 people in this gun task force. And then number three, let's figure out, let's kind of have an honest discussion of what policing is all about. It's about money. I mean, these guys were making tremendous amounts of money.
One of them doubled his salary.
They were costing the city, yeah, tremendous amount of money,
right,
through lawsuits. They were getting take-home cars. They have lifetime pensions. They have lifetime health benefits. The police department is the highest, you know, the most expensive agency, the most expensive with post-retirement. So, you know, when we talk about it, I think it's a crisis situation for the city if you were having a debate about how to fund schools, and yet we have this absolute utter disregard for the values of the community or the wholeness, the fiscal wholeness of the community. So, you know, those three things are probably the biggest thing. I mean, there's just no accountability. You can't make an argument at this point. Between the Department of Justice and the fact that they were doing this under the auspices of the Department of Justice, so there's absolutely, even the Department of Justice couldn't stop these guys. You know,
I mean, the Department of Justice was actively investigating the Baltimore City Police Department. These cats were still
It didn't seem to stop them at all. Right. So you think about that. You think about how much we have empowered. I know we all of us have dealt with crime in our lives and we deal with problems of crime in our communities. But think about the price we have paid for empowering a police department to behave in this way. And, you know, again, really, there's very little house cleaning. We have two suspensions, but we don't have to talk about it. I mean, the Department of Justice, no house cleaning. What is it going to take for our city to say we've had enough of bad policing, whatever you want to call it?
So the two officers who are suspended, mm-hmm, are they being charged with racketeering as these other?
No,
seven
these are just these are in administrative charges. I mean, we don't even know their ranks or their involvement. That's what I'm saying. I mean, a lot of this gets covered up because they don't have to talk about it. And I mean, I would imagine that the lieutenant who was signing the overtime slips should be in some sort of trouble, but maybe not.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing. I mean, they cut it off when the towing scandal happened, when officers were indicted for getting bribes from towing companies. A lot of time there were like supposedly 30 officers suspended on top of it. We never knew.
Right.
We never knew what it was. So a lot of people got away with it. So you know, I have to say to the political leadership of the city, good job, because we didn't hold them accountable then. Guess what happens? It keeps happening. What is going to happen in this city between Freddie Gray, between the Department of Justice, and now these seven officers, for city leadership to say enough is enough? You're going to be accountable to us. Not sure.
Hmm. All right, let's take some phone calls. Let's go to Ernest first in West Baltimore. Ernest wants to talk to Stephen specifically. Ernest, you're on First Edition. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing? Good evening to you and your guests.
Good evening.
Stephen, first question, I want to know, what happened to Donyell Taylor? Danya.
You mean the detective from the Freddie Gray case?
Yeah. Well, you know, she was arrested in Baltimore County for domestic violence.
Yes, that's true.
She was arrested for domestic violence.
Right.
And it wasn't a situation where she was married to the individual.
Right.
So therefore, they have to go with the trial.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, they're going to, you know, I don't know the status of that. That's a really good question. Just so people know, she was one of the key witnesses who became a hostile witness in the Freddie Gray case, right? Correct?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And, you know, it was a big controversy over her notes. But I don't know what the status of her domestic violence case. I have no idea, but that's a good point. I should look into that, actually.
Yeah, because it's very quiet. Let me get to, now, when I first came on the force, I worked in the Southeast District, and I was new. I had been on a little while. And then at a roll call, the lieutenant said, stay away from the train tracks and those boxcars. Don't go down there.
What does
that mean? Everybody was listening. Guess what?
What?
Police went down there and continued to break into the boxcars and steal televisions after being warned.
Okay.
And the FBI and the railroad police locked them up on the scene.
Wow.
Now, I don't know if you remember the incident that happened in the Northern District where they got a call for an alarm and a something was open that had stuff that you put in your yard.
All right.
You remember that?
I don't.
And what happened was they called the wagon up and start loading the wagon up with contraband. The wagon. And some person was watching and reported them.
So the point, Ernest, is that there have always been dirty cops.
Yes. Okay. And the thing with the tow truck.
Right. Ernest, we got to keep going, man.
Let me just.
We've got 10 seconds, bro. We got a bunch of people trying to get in. He's gone. Sorry, Ernest.
Sorry, Ernest.
Anyway, let's go to. But the point is, there's just always been dirty.
Yeah,
cops.
Yeah.
I think we're clear on that. I mean, really, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm just saying.
No.
Let's go to Brother Leo Burrows calling back. I know he wants to get into the conversation again. Let's go to Brother Burrows. You're on with the Mod Squad, Brother Burrows.
Yeah. Good evening, my friends. How are you?
All right, brother.
Well, you know, we're being pimped by the system. I mean, real live pimping. I mean, the mayor doesn't seem to know what to do. She keeps talking about she doesn't want control of the police. She just wants control of the school system. But you got to control the police because don't they take most of the budget? Isn't the budget, what is it, $400 million or more a year?
50%.
Yeah, $450 million, not including post-retirement benefits.
$450 million. The towing scandal I heard you mention, Rod Rosenstein was involved in that, wasn't he?
Yes, he was the one who prosecuted that, yes.
Yeah, and what happened? I mean, it kind of vanished from view. And I don't, to be honest with you, Rod Rosenstein, it looks to me like he will lock up a whole lot of black folks, including correction officers and black police officers, but I don't know that there's a quid pro quo with regard to white officers in numbers that are accountable.
If you remember, the toy scandal was all Hispanic officers, and there was a lot of rumors, there were a lot of suspensions with white officers, but not prosecuted.
Well, it's a game. And let me wind up on this point. Mary Pat Clark, Eric Costello, Bernard Jack Young, Sharon Green Middleton, all these people who are in city council who've been in the past administrations are much too damn silent on this matter of these carpetbagger police officers who don't live in our city, who are exploiting our people, getting away with murder, and we don't have accountability until this day. I think it's outrageous, and I don't know, what do we need? More demonstrations? What kind of leadership are we getting from the city state?
Yes, Brother
very, very little and very, very quiet. The drug dealers are involved with the police. Talking about shaking down drug dealers, the drug dealers are the police.
All right, Brother Burrows, we got to keep going. Thank you, Brother Burrows.
People are passionate about this.
Well, and they should be, but I mean, no more demonstrations, man. I mean, they,
you don't need any more evidence.
Look. The fact that Catherine Pugh, I've covered her for 20 years.
Yes.
I have a lot of respect for her as a legislator, as a person, fine person.
Yeah.
Brother Burroughs is right. How do you not want to, somebody has to take control of the police department.
Yeah.
I'm not choosing not to use certain adjectives, but I mean, the point I'm getting to is that I've been talking to people ever since this story broke, and people are like literally despondent over how do you have a population of people who even believe that? I mean,
well, think about that havoc that these seven of these officers were able to wreak. On an entire community, all the people
it
they
says,
robbed the money.
It says. And you wonder honestly, why we're still... man, it says, look, this is a nigga city, and this is how we're gonna treat mm-hmm. this city. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to be
offensive
about that, but I mean it says that the majority population of this city doesn't deserve better.
Absolutely,
we can do whatever we want to do because it's nothing but black people and poor people.
I mean, you know that
because
was...
none of this is visited upon the people who are gentrifying the city.
No,
that doesn't happen to them.
Didn't happen in Hamden.
No,
you know, I mean, zero tolerance didn't happen in Hamden, and it didn't happen in Roland Park. Didn't happen in the North Baltimore, Homeland. It certainly didn't, and it certainly won't.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I just got a text from Sergeant Lewis Hobson, who said, now only a major and above can approve overtime. So they have come up with a new overtime slip that now only majors.
Now. After this.
But this is...
they've been...
Ten years ago, they had this. I know. And then they also are doing an audit that will include all the rental cars because they're trying to figure out how many rental cars they actually have. So just remember this. I mean, just remember this is literally taking the wealth out of this community.
Yeah.
And they're doing it with utter disregard, as was expressed by the gentleman or the people in that indictment. They were basically mocking us.
Yeah. Let's go to Thomas in Churchville. Thomas, you're on with the Mod Squad.
Sean, how are you, my friend?
All right, man. How are you?
Steven, good afternoon to you. I got a homework assignment for you, Steven.
What is it?
Company called Next Car Rental Car.
Yes.
With Baltimore City getting all their undercover rental cars from.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to them and find out how many cars that they give the city.
It's a great way to approach it because when we did our investigation of all the damage, because for a while they were doing so much damage, they would go in front of the Board of Estimates every week with $20,000 or $30,000 bills, and we went to Next Car. They're right over there on 25th Street and Howard. They would not talk to us about it.
No, you have to go. You have to go to the corporate office that's located on 100 Main Street in Laurel, Maryland.
Okay, yeah, because I really do want to know. I mean, because I've asked the city how
Thomas,
many rental cars.
I appreciate it.
I've asked the city for information. I've asked the assistant controller and a couple other people, and I have not gotten. It's very difficult to find out how much the city spends on these rental cars and how many rental cars they have. But I'm definitely going to pursue it because I think it's important. Thank you for that information.
Let's go to Oscar next in West Baltimore. Oscar, you're on the Mod Squad. How you doing?
Okay, once again, and hello, Steve. Now, let me explain something to you. Didn't you just say during the first part of your conversation, you were saying there's no accountability?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not, and it never have been. When I first came on, Pomelo was the commissioner. He had three deputy commissioners. One name was Thomas Keyes. And I used to take my clothes to the cleaners on the 4700 block of Liberty Heights.
Sparky's?
I knew the girl and the clerk. And the police used to take their clothes in there. And this is what she told me, say, who's this guy named Thomas Keyes? Do you know him? I said, yeah, he's a deputy commissioner. She said, guess what I heard him say? And I want people to listen, and I want to be sensitive, but I'm quoting verbatim. Thomas Keyes, the deputy commissioner, said, that's why I never wanted to do this. The guys in the stop squad, I told some of them, but they didn't care. They just want to be in plain clothes. He said, if you want to catch a nigger, put some other niggers in plain clothes and give them some money, and you can catch all the niggers you want.
Well, there goes Oscar. He left with that.
Yeah.
Dropped the mic.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, there's no doubt about it that, you know, I don't think people realize how revolutionary plain clothes units are. I mean, it used to be guys in a car with a jacket and tie, but anybody who's seen them in Baltimore City knows that they're guys in in t-shirts and jeans driving around with absolutely no supervision. And, you know, this is just what the same unit V said prior to the violent impact crime position was the same way. No supervision, no communication in the districts, as far as I know. It's utterly reckless.
Someone's calling with the name Jim. I suspect it's not their actual name. They're allegedly calling from the police department. Definitely want to hear what they have to say. Jim, you're on with the Mod Squad. How you doing?
You know, what I have to say, man, I'm 80 years old. I'm in Baltimore.
Well, you're not from the police department, actually.
Right now. But what I'm saying, everybody that's talking about this is a bit too casual for me, because I go back a long time on Johansson Street where I've seen them lock up horse and wagons that blacks had. I've seen them lock up people that didn't even know who they were, what they were done, and make you come down and identify. But the one thing I can't understand, from back then, we are still the same. We have all these good lawyers in town, the Murphys and all the rest of them. If it's constitutional for the police department to be semi-military organization, then it's supposed to be controlled by civilians. Mm-hmm. The police shouldn't be controlling the police.
Okay. Fair enough, Jim. Thank you.
I can't understand why we can't have a conversation and bring some people in that knows about the Constitution.
Understood, Jim. You don't listen to the show. Let's go to Clarence next in West Baltimore. Clarence, you're on with the Mod Squad. How you doing?
Hey, thanks, guys. You know, these two unnamed officers were probably known to be conflicted from the beginning, but these are the two sacrificial lambs that they decided that they would cut a deal with as long as you protected the above. So as long as you substantiate what we say of the seven officers that were previously related and you protect those above, then you'll get a deal. As far as the cars go, if you were to dig deep enough, you would find that somebody in Baltimore City that's connected either through City Hall or the police department mm-hmm. is getting kickback or making a tremendous amount of money off of these cars. And I relate that to what I told you a couple of weeks ago about the surveillance system in the plane. That's a 4 or 5 year old system that somebody finally got the bright idea. Well, we'll just reduplicate this and point it down at the people instead of outer space. And you, if you dig deep enough, you'll find that this clown has a connection with somebody in the police department and City Hall, and they're going to get a kickback from the purchase of that. That's the way that thing works. Conspiracy theory, Gotham conspiracy theory. Thank you, John.
All right.
Well, there's no doubt that you could, you know, the people that own these rental cars might make political donations, you know. You don't get those kind of contracts for no reason.
For no reason, yeah.
Now, today the mayor, in a press conference at City Hall, called the amount of police overtime unconscionable. So we will see. Now, that coupled with what Sergeant Hobson told me, that they now have majors having to sign up on overtime. But as you said, why now? Why?
I mean,
this is not something that's new.
Right. No, it's really old. Let's go to Darren next in Baltimore. Darren, you're on with the Mod Squad. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think there's a lot that can be done. Stephen, if you remember when Martin O'Malley was the mayor, didn't mm-hmm. he fire police officers and then had Sean Malone take their pension?
Yeah, he did. He did. They did fire some.
It can be done. It's whether and we know Kathy Pugh, she has the will. The question is, does she have the skill? I think it was just a couple of weeks ago she walked ahead of her IT department out of City Hall, right?
Yes, that actually happened.
What's to stop her from asking for Commissioner Davis' badge? And then what's to stop her from before the federal judge and saying that they're already in violation of the consent decree, so this police department should be placed under receivership? Since up to now, it's been under deceivership in terms of how they're going out committing these crimes.
I mean, I think you're right.
You've got to put some pressure on them, and there's no pressure being put on them right now.
I agree with it 100%.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's amazing how tolerant the community is of this kind of behavior.
Is it the community or the politicians who are tolerant of it?
Well, really, it's the politicians.
Who are supposed to represent the citizens. On a positive note, I saw where young brother Gerard Mungo, who's at Patterson High School, won the mm-hmm. state championship. So I want to congratulate him.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
That's great news.
One young brother who wasn't broken. And I think 2 days ago was the anniversary of his arrest, if not yesterday.
Yeah, that's actually some good news. This way I know Gerard was 7 years old when he was arrested. Just to turn 7, was arrested for sitting on a dirt bike. It was a very controversial arrest. And he has become a basketball star. So I think there's a lot of happiness there.
Thank God.
But I mean, I interviewed him about a year or two ago, and he was still traumatized by it. I don't think people really understand who have an experience in
when you're 7, you're getting locked up for sitting on a dirt
bike. Even if you're 21, getting locked up is traumatized, let alone you're a little kid.
Yeah. Let's take one more call. Let's go to Pat in Baltimore. Pat, you're on with the Mod Squad.
Hi. I would like to see people keep more focus on the function of the police, because that would explain a lot. Like, the police are there to protect white money and white power.
Okay.
And that means that, well, you can sell drugs in some places, but not in others. You can live in some places and shop in some place and go to school in some places, but not in others.
Right.
And you can see how Baltimore is like two cities. So I remember in the Freddie Gray episode, there was a white retired Philadelphia police captain who said, yes, the police exists to protect white money. And so when you have rogue police, those police are supposed to be rogues. He said they like the police to be aggressive because that's how they're going to enforce their agenda.
Exactly, Pat. Yeah. We appreciate your comment.
It is insightful,
but it is well known, and it is a historical fact that law enforcement is about doing what it does, and that is protecting white money and controlling black bodies. We understand that. And it's a historical fact. Stephen Janis,
well,
one half of the Mod Squad, man. Thank you.
Taylor, we'll be back Friday.
All right, very good, very good.
Yeah.
Stephen, thank you, man. I appreciate
you.
All right, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, second half of the show, when it's Wellness Wednesday, Kenyatta Moon, co-host of Holistic Living, will be talking about continuing the conversation about disciplining our children outside of beating them. Stay tuned. You're listening to First Edition. Thank you.